39
Before we begin, I want to thank Dr. Ozabel for helping me prepare these Mar Makomos. We are reading this, the Parshios, the beginning of Sefer Shmos. We're going to begin with a Medrash Rabbah. This is the opening line of Medrash Rabbah on Shmos. I did have a translation which was provided for me, but the translation is really rather old-fashioned, so I'll just refer to it a few times. I thought it's better if we present it in the original Hebrew, and on occasion I'll make reference to the translation. Whoever wants a copy of the translation after the shiur should feel free to take it. Begins the first line by quoting the pasuk, the first pasuk in Shmos, and they quote a pasuk in Mishle. Chosech shifto sone veno, v'ohavo shicharo musar. According to my antiquated translation, he that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. Now this is not my, I can't really handle this. I'm just giving you an explanation why we're using the Hebrew, not the English. The only version of Medrash that exists is this translation, is this edition that I know about. B'noeg sheba'olam, Adam sheomala chaveiro, Ploni hika lebincha. Someone hit your son. Yored imo ad lechayev. The person resents the individual who gave his son a patch, and he's willing to deprive him of his livelihood. That's what's translation. But to the contrary, lelamdecha shekola monea beno min amardus, line 3, sof boli letarbus ro vison ehu. Anyone who refrains from chastising his son caused him to fall into evil ways and thus comes to hate him. You want your son to love you, so you don't discipline him, but the exact opposite result ensues. And they give examples. Shekematzinu b'Yishmoel, Shehoylo gaguim al Avram Ovid. This is the translation. Who behaved wickedly before Abraham his father. Quite understand that translation, is giving it to us as it is. For lo ridohu, but he did not chastise him. The yotzo letarbus ra, with the result that he fell into evil ways. Visanehu, v'hotzio mi beis oreka, he despised him and cast him forth empty handed from his house. Now the question is, who hates whom? Because the impression is that the father hates the son. That's the context over here. Ma'asa Yishmo. What exactly the details? Kfir ben Tesvav Shana, he was 15 years old. We're talking about adolescent rebellion. Here we go. 15 years old. Familiar, has any teenagers, children, or remembers being a teenage child? Woo, 15 is a tough age. Okay? So what did he do? He brought idols in the street. He toyed with them. And he worshipped them, as he had seen others do. Miyad, Bereshis Chaf Aleph, Sarah says, out. Out. Get him out of here. And the psukah we're all familiar with. Avram didn't want to do it. Right? Didn't want to do it. And Hashem says to Avram, you have to do it. Avram was considered secondary to Sarah b'nevius. Avram was secondary to Sarah when it came to prophecy. Okay? Secondary to Sarah when it came to prophecy. I have a big question to ask you. Prophecy? What's prophecy? Who needs prophecy over here? There's a question of parenting. There's a parenting dispute. Our first family parenting dispute on record. Our first father and the first mother. Avram and Sarah had a dispute. What do you do with Yishmael? Sarah said out, and Avram didn't want to listen. So Hashem intervened. You know, trust me, when you and your wife have a problem, Hashem doesn't intervene. Doesn't appear to you. You know, if you... Well... Hashem appeared to Avram and said, listen to Sarah. As if he appeared to Sarah. Had he appeared to Sarah to listen to Sarah, that would have been a problem. He appeared to Avram and said, listen, you better listen to Sarah. So the Rebbe was a chassidim. You have to appear to the right party. So he appeared to Avram and said, please listen to Sarah. And as a result of Avram listening to Sarah, this is what happened. But why do we say that he's secondary to Sarah ben Nevius, the prophecy? What's with prophecy? No prophecy over here. I believe the answer is very, very profound. On a superficial level, Avraham Avinu was right. If you only take into account the here and now, why should you send a son away from your house? Very bad thing to do. Sarah had a longer view, a broader, more deep and penetrating view. She saw to the future. She saw that if a Yishmael would be allowed to stay in the house, not only would he not turn out any better, but he would make Yitzchak worse at the end of Klal Yisrael. So therefore, the expression that is used in describing Sarah's supremacy over Avraham is Nevius, it's prophecy. Now, the problem, of course, becomes no one is a prophet nowadays. So how do you have the prophecy that Sarah was blessed with? You don't. No one does. But still, there's such a thing as a mother's intuition. Not prophecy, we're not privy to that, but still the mother's intuition is extraordinarily powerful. As a result, because of Hashem's intervention, so Avraham Avinu got up in the morning and he gave him lechem, lechem asmayim, he gave him some bread and some water. L'amedcha she'yosonei li'yishmol al she'yotzo l'tar b'sro. He hated Yishmael because of his evil ways. Imagine a father hating a son. Imagine Avraham Avinu, who loved all human beings, but having a son who rebelled was so hard for him. Despite the fact that it was so hard for him, he wouldn't have sent them away. He would have kept them in the house anyway, save for Hashem's intervention to follow Sarah's prophecy. V'shilcha hu v'ima hagar reikam, sent them away basically empty-handed. V'tirdo mi'beis halakach, and he really sent them away from the house. In this fashion, how could he do such a thing? He had no money. Avraham Avinu was wealthy. He should send his children, his child, away without clothing, without parnasa, without micha, food. So he said he didn't deal with him. What happened at the end of the day? Pere Adam. Right? He's a wild man. This is example number one. Avraham apparently at the beginning did not discipline Yishmael, and the result was a disaster. Example number two. Here, these are critiques of the greatest people in Jewish history. Avraham Avinu. Number two. Vayav Yitzchak Aseitha. The line starts the word Yitzchak. About a third of the way down. Lefichach Yotzal Atar B'Sral Shalor Rideu. History repeats itself. Because he did not chastise and he became depraved. What did he do wrong? K'moshe Shaninu. Chomesh Averus Avar Esav Arasha V'Oso Ayom. On one day did five sins. Baal Na'amurasa Horagasa Nefesh Kavat Chiasa Mesim Kavat B'Ika V'Bizes Abchoro. That same day it's described at the beginning of Parshas told us. V'od Shetohav Mises Avar, aside from five sins, he wanted his father to die. U'Bikesh Laragas Och, he wanted to kill his brother. And V'Goram Le'Yakov Livroch Me'Avosav, he forced Yaakov to run away. He went, of course, to Yishmael to learn bad ways and to get more wives. And the pasuk is quoted. So we have two examples in our earliest history of the fact that our father Avraham did not discipline Yishmael, our father Yitzchak did not discipline Esav, and the result was a disaster. Didn't stop there. We go from the first family of our patriarchs, Avraham and Yitzchak, to the first family of royalty. This is the line which begins Bereshis. This is a Bereshis Chof Ches is the first word on the line. Cheotibo David, Shelo Yisrael Avshalom Beno Velo Ridohu. David did not chastise his son Avshalom, didn't rebuke him. What happened? Same thing. Yotzal Latabas Ro, Ubikesh Laro Gest Ovav. He wanted to kill David, no less. Veshachav and Pilakshav, he slept with his concubines. And caused him to wandering barefooted and weeping. And what else did it cause? Amazingly, thousands, tens of thousands fell in the ensuing civil war. Caused terrible things which had no end. Tichsiv, Mizmor LaDavid, Tilim Gimel. He ran away from his son Avshalom, wanted to kill him. What does it say? Hashem morabu tzorai. How many are my problems? How many are my adversaries? Terrible, terrible story. And it goes further and says, the kosher tarbus ra Besor beso shel adam mimelchemes Gog u'Magog. Woo! Terrible. Gog u'Magog, we know that's the apocalyptic, at the end of the day, the whole discussion, going to be terrible wars that you read about in Sefer Yecheskel. And having a depraved son in your own house is worse than that. Why? In Melchemes Gog u'Magog, it says in Tilim, Lama Rok Shugoyim, Perek Beis in Tilim, Ulum Miagurik, Al Hashem HaMashicho, this whole fight against, that's not so serious. The very next parak in Tilim says, Marabu Tzorah, it's worth to have a problem in your own house than to experience the Melchemes Gog u'Magog. That's quite a powerful statement. Of course, we haven't yet seen Gog u'Magog, but we've seen plenty of awful wars in our time, which maybe have some connection to that terrible ultimate battle. And we also see families torn asunder by difficulties in the home. And while it's hard for us to evaluate which is worse, because they're both terrible, here the Chazal are teaching us that a difficulty in one's own home could be even more difficult than the ultimate war of Gog u'Magog. Example number 4, also David. The Chayotzei ba'osa David ba'doniyo, shelo rido bi'isurin, v'lo garbo. And therefore went out the Tarbat Shor. Malachim Aleph Aleph. It's a haftor we read not that long ago. That David HaMelech did not give a proper rebuke to his son Adoniyahu. Never told him, why'd you do this? Lama Kocha Sisa. And he was born after Avshalom. What do you mean? Means we told Shiyot to the Tarbat Shor v'lo rido Aviv. That was Avshalom. Uchsev Adoniyol Otzav Avim Yomav. He didn't give him any Musar. Afu Yotzal Tar Basra. And if it's found after Avshalom. Because after all, it's the same thing. So David had two sons that he did not rebuke. And both of them went off the derech. So we've had 4 examples. Avram and Yishmael. Yitzchak and Esav. David and Avshalom. And David and Adoniyol. This is in the negative. Now it says Mishle Yud Gimel, about 2/3 down. The Oav Oshicha Ramusar. Zakodesh Baruch Hu. Hashem is the ultimate parent. Al Sha'oav Es Yisroel. Malachi Aleph, Ahavti Eschem. Shumar Ba'osan B'Yisurin. He gives us tribulations. They call it chastisements. Hashem gave us 3 Matanos Tovos. And the Gemara is quoting Gemara Brachas. 2 Yisurin. What are the 3? Torah. Eretz Yisrael, and Chaye Ha'olam Abba. I have to love this. It says, those who see it in the line right above where it says in the end of the line, Devarim Ches, Torah, Eretz Yisrael, V'Chaye Ha'olam Abba. What I love about this is it's the same as the Gemara Brachas, but they added one word. In the Gemara Brachas, it says that there are 3 things, 3 Matanos Tovas were given by Yisurim, Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Abba. Here it says, Chaye Ha'olam Abba. Why am I so excited about that? Because they quote, I think, from the Arizal, who said that these 3 matanos are the Rosh Yetevos, Achas Sha'altim Es Hashem Osa Vakesh, Eretz Yisrael, Chai Olam Abba, and Torah. I was bothered, but the Gemara doesn't say Chai Olam Abba, it says only Olam Abba. Okay. But here in the Medrash, it has Chai Olam Abba. So we have the Achas fits in even better. These 3 are all of one. And he gives examples. Tilim Tzadi Dalet. Ashri Ageva Shet Yasrenu Ka. What does that mean? Fortunate is a person that Hashem chastises and does this because he's giving him the Torah. It's a very, very important thing. Eretz Yisrael. What does it say? We need a Balkori over here. What does it say? Hashem alokecha miyasrecha. They expect you to know what's in the parentheses, what's in the etc. over here. I'd expect you to be a Talmud Chacham to know what's in the next pasuk. In the English edition, they don't expect anything. They tell you exactly what it says. It says over here in the English edition, it says, 1 second. And thou shalt consider in thy heart that as a man chasteneth his son, so the Lord thy God chasteneth thee. Okay? That's the Vigomer in translation. Afterwards, Hashem is in Eretz Yisrael. Olam Abba, ki ner mitzvah v'torah or v'gomer. Doesn't tell you how the pasuk ends. Who knows the pasuk ends? What does it mean? Right? And the reproofs of instruction are the way of life. Okay? So look it up. It's in Mishlei Perek Vav. Perek Vav, Pasuk, Chaf Gimel. Okay? Not only that. One who a father who chastises his son. Mosif haben ava al aviv u'mechabdo. Paradoxically, the more the father chastises the son, paradoxically, contrary to common sense, the son loves his father and honors his father more. That goes against what we would normally think, right? If the father lets the son do whatever he wants, he'll love the father. The opposite. And the pasuk again, a pasuk in Mishlei. It's on Mishlei Perek Chavtes. What does it say? What does it say? Yaser bincha v'yanichecha. What does it mean? Correct thy son, and he will give thee rest. Okay. And doesn't say the rest of the pasuk, the gomer. Ye, he will give thy light, the light unto thy soul. V'yitei madan al nafshecha. I'm just giving you from my memory what the Hebrew of that English is. The gomer. Right? And it says another pasuk in Mishlei. Yaser bincha ki yesh tikva. And he adds, Abba, Shenema ve'o'avo shicharu musar. To be shicharu musar lekach o'avo. Because he chasteneth him, therefore doth he love him. It goes in both directions, right? He translates that the son loves the father because the father gives the son musar. One could translate, no. The father who's given the son musar loves his son because he wants what's best for his son. And now we give examples to counter the earlier ones. So far, we've only had Hashem's example to Klal Yisrael as a good parent, as it were, and the negativity we've seen is Avram with Yishmael, Yitzchak with Esav, David with both Avshalom and Adoniyahu. What about good parenting? Atamotish Avram Yiser es Yitzchak beno. Avram Avinu chastised his son Yitzchak. V'limdo Torah. V'hidricho bedrocho. And he made sure he would follow his way. The Siv. Ekev Hashem Avram Bakoli. This is Avram Avinu's way, was to follow Hashem's voice. And then it says afterwards, Ve'ela told his Yitzchak ben Avram. V'lamedcha. Let's take a little step back. What do you mean? Ekev Hashem Avram Bakoli. That refers to Avram Avinu. How does that pasuk teach us that he taught it to Yitzchak? I would have said a different pasuk. Ki yedativ, asher yitzaves bonav es beis al achrov v'shamru derech Hashem lasos tov v'mishu. That's not what I would have quoted that pasuk. For some reason, the Medrash quoted a pasuk which I don't see offhand how that shows that he taught it to his children. Anyway, and it says the Eile told us Yitzchak ben Avram that he followed his father in Mas and Tovim, and it talks about the Akedah, and he gave him all of his wealth. So too, Yitzchak, the last four lines, Meshacher Musa liYakov, Shelimdo Yitzchak Torah, V'Yischo Bebeis Talmudo. Ooh, V'Yakov Ishtam Yoshev Oholim. What does that mean? He gave him a hard time. He made sure that he disciplined him in the yeshiva. He should be a good Talmud. And then he left his father's house. Where'd he go? Didn't go to the bar. He went to the Eiver's Beis Medrash to learn more Torah. Lefichach zocha lebracha v'yorashes haaretz. And Yaakov Avinu chastised all of his children, every one of them. It's the last two lines. V'rido osam, and he rebuked them. V'lim dem derochov, and he taught them his ways. Shelo hoya behem psoles. He was the first of the patriarchs that all of his sons were righteous, because he rebuked all of them. Apparently, for whatever reason, Avram did not rebuke Yishmael, Yitzchak did not rebuke Esav, and Yaakov rebuked all of his sons. And we go back to the first pasuk: Eil Shmos Bnei Yisrael Abor Mitzrayma, Hishvan Kulam LeYaakov, Shekulam Tzadikim Kayotei Bohayu. Hevei, Oavo Shicharo Musa. What an opening to say for Shmos. Wow! So we see from here the importance of discipline. Now, so we have here the first pasuk. In the first line, Chosech Shifto Soni Beno, which is often translated today in our English expression of spare the rod, spoil the child. Right? That's what it sounds like. So at first glance, it tells us we should all take out our rods, He that spareth his rod hateth his son, which means the same way as we say in America, spare the rod, spoil the child. Because you hate your son, you spoil your son. So let's all take out our whips, okay? Ready? One, two, three, stop. Let us turn to page 34, in the other page you have from the Sefer of Volbi, Zichrono Levracha. It's talking about punishment. Page 34 on top. Punishment expresses parents' desire to control. A person feels that if he can punish, he can control. The same is true of a Rebbe in his classroom. Once a man presented himself to us as a candidate for Mashkiach of the Yeshiva Ketana. Rebbe Volba was involved in many yeshivas. One of the questions he asked me was about the authority he would possess. Would he have the authority to expel a child from the yeshiva? This is his first question. First question? That's a crazy question. I saw he would never develop into a mashkiach or mechanech. If this is his initial perspective, when is it okay to expel a child? If the authority to expel is what gives him the feeling that he's in charge, then he cannot function as a mashkiach or mechanech in yeshiva. This is an invalid approach. Or you'll say, well, who cares? I'm not a principal in a school. What does it have to do with me? Now we come to what's everyone here. The same is true of parents. If their whole perspective is when to punish, this is a perverse approach that undercuts the basis of any sort of healthy chinuch. But isn't it true that he who withholds the rod hates his son? Right? This is the passage we saw, Mishlei 13:24. And that one must beat one's child? This is Rav Volbi's head-on confrontation with this passage. As I told you, he's been criticized in other parts of the yeshiva world for this approach, which I'm going to read to you right now. In another verse we find, so I heard the flock of slaughter, indeed the poorest of the flock, I took for myself two rods, the one I called pleasantness, and the other one I called damaging, and I fed the flock. Zechariah 11:7. Okay? Here we see that there's a rod with which we damage and hit, and there's another rod that we also use to educate, but with pleasantness. The rod of pleasantness, called Makal Noam. And if it says, see Sanhedrin 24a, there's a discussion of people who are using Man'imin Zeba Zeba Halacha, even though they're arguing strongly, it's B'derech Noam. Noam. There are schools in Eretz Yisrael, from America's Arab, they're called the Noam schools. They try to follow these two elements of Eretz Yisrael, the Katamid Chacham would use Noam, and educating children with rod of pleasantness. One must know that the rod of pleasantness is also a rod. So Rav Volbi is interpreting, spare the rod, spoil the child. Yes, the rod of pleasantness. Oh, not the simple read, I have to be there. Not the simple read. Rav Volbi was one of the Gedolei Hador, and he took it on himself to read it this way for good reasons. But it doesn't necessarily cause pain. If I give a child encouragement, this is also a rod. If the child does something good, and I give him a piece of chocolate, it's also a rod. But it's a rod of pleasantness. Unbelievable pshat. And if your child does well, and you give him chocolate, and he doesn't do well, you don't give him chocolate, so that's also musa. If you give him chocolate either way, that's a problem. Now, Volba concedes. If you give him chocolate for no matter what he does, that's a problem. But if the punishment is just in passivity, not giving him chocolate, okay, that's a kind of a discipline. Which an individual can accept. Someone asked us last week if we gave out dessert to the children if they didn't eat the main dish. My wife said no. I guess that was the rod of pleasantness. The cake was given if you had your meat, and if you didn't have your meat, then no cake. But not a patch, just no cake. Okay. It is impossible to estimate how much damage someone does to a child when it gives them a serious spanking. Use the word serious spanking. That's very important to understand. A little patch, that's just, we'll see soon, it's first aid. But a serious spanking, for real, I'm ready to give you a really spanking, it causes damage. If Eliel Lepiam would say to us, with children, only in a pleasant way. He said that when he got older, he regretted every spanking he gave to his children when they were small. Rabbi Eliyahu raised 11 children, and many of them became great Rosh Yeshiva. He said he regretted every spanking he gave them when he was small. All right, then why did he give it to him in the first place? I guess he felt at the time that he had to do it. But later on, in retrospect, problems we don't have retrospect when we are in the heat of the battle, in the heat of the difficult circumstance in the house, we don't always have this long view. We don't have the prophecy that Sarah Imenu had. Even Rabbi Lapian, as great as he was in that prophecy. Chazal say, quotes the Medrash, each and every blade of grass that has a mazel that beats it and tells it to grow. That is the force that causes growth, Chazal call a blow. The blow that says grow. Of course, the intention is not that an angel with white wings and pink cheeks, armed with a baton, sits on every blade of grass and hits it. Chazal's intention is to say that there is a force that causes grass to grow, and that force in the language of Chazal is called a blow. This is how we should understand the rod mentioned in the verse, Kosech Shifto Sone Beno. He says, doesn't mean you hit him and give him a patch. It means it's a force that says grow. Tell your child, grow up. And give him the. Okay, come on in. Give him the. He's a tzaddik, this boy. Give him the. What a perfect child. Give him the encouragement that he needs to grow. He's going to grow up to be a wonderful young man. Okay? Give him the encouragement. There's no need to understand this verse only in the sense of hitting the child. There are other ways to guide his growth, better ways. And I quote a fascinating Gemara Masech the Kiddushin on Daf Lamed. When is it in the law to spank, permitted to spank a child? 16 or 24? Now that's not quite what it says in the Gemara. The Gemara says you should marry off your children young. And marry off your child when you can still sort of have him around the neck. That's the lashon of the Gemara. And some say 16, some say 22, some say 24. And the Ramah understands it in the literal sense. If you strike the son beyond the limit, you will violate Lifnei Iver Lo Sita in Mechshol, since his son will rebel and might hit back. Now, in those days, until the son hit 22 or 24, he wouldn't hit back. That's the Ramah quotes in Yoredeya. The simple pshat, I must tell you, I thought, the Lashon of the Gemara is elsewhere, Hamakeh libno godol, yeh benidui, the Gemara might cut, if you hit your son as a godol, she'd benidui. If I'm not mistaken, the Ritva is over there, it means bar mitzvah. Bar mitzvah. Not 18, not 16, not 22, not 20, not 24, bar mitzvah, 13. And, this is certainly a more down-to-earth limit. The Ramah's limit maybe existed in some other world, not in our world. But by Volbi goes much beyond that. The reality today is that if we spank a three-year-old, we violate Lifnei Iver. We see that the child rebels against his father. You can see that a child that receives a slap wants to slap back. He lifts his hand, but he can't reach his father's face. There is only movement, but the movement is clear. The child rebels. This rebellion must be taken into account. So Rabbi Volba says, three-year-old, you really shouldn't hit. But what happened in the older generations? I think times change. In previous generations, the situation was different. Children had more tolerance. They could tolerate spankings. Children had stronger character. It didn't damage and receive a few blows. Today, it's different, especially in Eretz Yisrael. You crush a child by spanking him, you hurt the child. And your relationship with the child. And when the child grows up, he might close himself off from his parents. Then it'll be impossible to build a trusting relationship, an open relationship. It's terrible. It's really a bad thing. Rabbi Volbe is not saying that our generation is better than the previous generation. Maybe things are better in the old days. But we have to be realists, Rabbi Volbe is saying. Realistically, in today's world, that's what's happening. Children are not able to, by and large, to be educated in the way that their great-grandparents were educated. The world has changed, for better or worse. Sure, he says, there's some unusual situations of pressure. A lot of sleep children have to go to sleep. The mother's exhausted. She might slap the children to achieve quiet. That's a rare event. Ravalbi calls this Ezra Rishona, emergency, first aid. Shouldn't happen every week or even every month. In other words, Revolve was saying, patching a child should happen less than once a month. That's a halachic construct. Seriously. If you look in certain areas of halacha, We say it happens once a month, it's happening, you know, it's called frequently. It happens less than once a month, it's called infrequently. So Rav Alba is saying, Pech, less than once a month. More than once a month, he claims, is destructive. So you'll say, okay, I'll follow Rav Alba, I'm putting my hands in my pockets, I'm not going to ever slap my child. So, but then I get frustrated. He's not listening. So I can't slap. What do I have to do? Yell at him. I have to have some way of disciplining. Says Rav Alba, sorry. Screaming at a child is as bad or perhaps worse than spanking a child. Oh. If you pay attention, you see that when a father screams at his son, the child is so terrified that he begins to tremble. The scream so severely affects the child's nerves that he begins to shake. Screaming is worse than a light slap. Oh, heavy patch is the worst. Next worst is screaming. And least worst is a light slap. Let's see the hierarchy over here in a revolver situation. Best is none of the three. Okay? It's hard to control yourself. And the father comes home, he gets exempt from curlew or work, tired and hungry. Children want to jump on him. They haven't seen him all day. Bedtime has already come and gone. Despite the mother's yelling, the children refuse to go to bed. A father might get angry and begin to yell too. It's true, it's difficult. Nonetheless, screaming damages. And he says, Rav Alba, it cannot be a good educator without midos. If you don't work on yourself, you can't educate. He quotes up Chaim Volozhiner. Now, Chaim Volozhiner lived 200 years ago. Not from yesterday. What did he say? Today, harsh language won't be accepted. In other words, today. Can you imagine if it was true then? How much more true it is 200 years later? In some previous generations of more than 200 years ago, if you gave a sharp Musar rebuke, it was accepted. Today, it just doesn't work. If we express ourselves harshly, people will not listen to us. People can only hear soft, nice words. And someone whose nature is not to speak softly and who angers quickly when people don't do his will is exempt from the mitzvah of tochacha rebuke. Who passes this way? Rav Chaim Volozhiner. An angry person cannot give tochacha. Can't. Can't give tochacha. Can't give musar. And if we are all angry, so we have to be very careful, you know, to control ourselves. This is very, 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 very important. And continues Rav Alba. The mitzvah of chinuch is anchored in the mitzvah of tochacha. It seems that an angry person is exempt from chinuch. However, one cannot exempt himself from chinuch since ultimately a father remains a father. Therefore, we have no option but to control ourselves. In other words, you don't have to be a Rebbe. You don't have to be someone who's going to sit in the classroom. That you don't have to be. But if you are blessed by Hashem with a child, you have a responsibility to take care of that child. And therefore, since someone who's angry cannot take care of a child, cannot do chinuch, you have to somehow control yourself. Remember that we spoke about it in our previous discussion of relations between husband and wives. We said that a husband, once he gets married, lo yehei ragzon. There were two different texts in the Rambam. Someone pointed out to me later on. Was it ragzon or rogez, whatever it was. In either event, a man, once he gets married, should not be getting angry at all. Because if he gets angry, even at somebody else, it has a negative impact on his wife. That's how we explained it when we learned that Rambam. So too, with respect to a child. Not only should the father not be getting angry at the child, which is a disaster, but he should try not to get angry at all. Because if he gets angry, his son will learn from the father's example and will also become a balkas. He should try to present himself when his children are around in a calm manner. I'm speaking for myself. I am the first to admit having made many mistakes in this regard. When raising children, I used to get angry sometimes. Because the reason that Rabbi Volbe explains, it's hard to control yourself. There's a tumult in the house, many children and misbehaving one after the other. So I made mistakes. And I'm a very small person, but I can echo Rabbi Eliel Lapian in regretting the pets that I gave to my children at the time. I tried not to give them too much pech, but even the little few times that I did, it was probably a mistake. My father, Zichron Levrach, would always have a phrase when he would want to give us musa. He would say, probably got it from his father, I'll take off my belt. And I probably used to get whipped with a belt, right? But he never did. He would just threat, I'll take off my belt. That was the You know, that was meant to be serious. This is army business. But I don't think he ever did. I don't remember once in my life they ever took off his belt. But that was just a way, a phrase to say, I mean business. Right? So what I should have done was follow my father's example and say, submit some other phrase instead of actually giving a patch here and there, which I did. But I regret it.
What makes you say that you did it wrong? Perhaps the children, the way they turned out so nicely, perhaps it was a result because you gave them these yelling and spanking.
Maybe. And that you never saw me give my children patch?
Never.
Okay, good. Jack grew up almost in my house, literally. So if she says no, I guess I didn't do it when you were around. Okay, so that's that itself says something. If I control myself when someone else is in the house, that means you control yourself when it walks out of the house. You have to get control. If you lose control, you always lose control. Baruch Hashem. Now, you should avoid harshness, especially with children. They accomplish nothing. The opposite is true. They damage. You have to do this soft approach. What should be done when the child doesn't listen? We must express our demand and re-express it until the child listens. This is the wisdom of Chinuch. Know how to speak and when to speak. Okay? Sometimes the child's not ready to listen to anything. I remember many times a kid would walk in, something was wrong, he'd just go into the room and slam the door. You know, it says in the Chazal, Al teratzes chavera b'shas kaso, b'chavercha b'shas kaso. When someone is fuming mad, it's the wrong time to start reasoning with that person. And it's true of a child too. A child has to have some kind of let him just, express his rage. Go into his room, slam the door. Wait, what's the rush?
Do you have any tears up or breaks all the furniture?
Doesn't break anything. He just mopes in his room. Chances are, you wait 15 minutes, he'll come out slowly. He doesn't want to be sitting in solitary his whole life. He'll come out. He'll give him a big hug and a kiss and say, oh, Chaim, what's the matter? And if that doesn't work, so in 15 minutes, you can walk in. As soon as you walk in, I'm like, he starts, he has to get himself into fake the rage all over again. He's been quiet 15 minutes, but we walk in, but then by that time he's already calmed down somewhat, you can try to reason with him. But give him a chance to let off some steam. When to talk is very important. Threats are not healthy. Again, my father took off his belt, said it, we didn't take it as, it wasn't really a threat, I mean, I'm serious about this one. It wasn't really a threat. Because he said it, he cried wolf. He said it so many times, never did it. It was a figure of speech. Okay? This does not mean that we shouldn't demand things of the child, or that we should give in to him and every time he shrugs his shoulders. We shouldn't threaten him. Find a positive way of conveying the demands. 10 times better than a negative approach, the approach that could be classified as threatening. This doesn't mean, ladies and gentlemen, that we shouldn't give any discipline. As we said before, there is discipline, there are consequences. If you don't do this and this and this, this and this and this. And frankly, I believe that sometimes, in a limited way, if we can find that what we call a midah keneged midah, Rashi in the sixth parasha quoted, midah keneged midah, that the Egyptians sinned this way, and they were punished this way. It's really based upon our Rashi in Parashas Yisro more clearly. That because they sinned with water, they were punished with water, and then down the line. In my home, when the kids were young, there was only one punishment that was an automatic. It was a punishment which was, in some sense, severe, but really didn't hurt, didn't involve any patch, didn't involve any scolding. It was just a wake-up call, because there were certain things we didn't want, and we felt we could use a midah keneged midah. If you sin with your mouth, you'll suffer with your mouth. There were two sins with the mouth that I just couldn't handle it when the children were growing up. One was bad language. Kids go to the school, and my kids went to Breuer's, and they didn't pick it up in my house. Now the Gemara does say in Sukkah that the children say it's either from the father or the mother. I can say Edison. These words were never uttered by me or by my wife, ever. They pick up these words in the street yard, in the schoolyard. They knew very well, automatic punishment. They say one of those words, you would wash their mouth with soap. Now let me see what that meant. Don't get carried away. All the men took the child into the bathroom, had OU. Why is there an OU on the dishwashing soap? It must be, because they know about this in my house. took a little bit of soap on my finger, just a little bit, the OU, and put it on his teeth. It was just showing this is not to be tolerated. And there was one more sin of the mouth which received the same punishment, and that was biting. Moshe remembers biting. Kids would bite each other. So we said, it's not tolerable. Okay. So we had a problem, though. So how do I know he bit you? They show here's the teeth marks. So they would say, he bit himself and blaming it on me. We had to be to judge those cases. We had to figure out whose teeth marks they were. This all went on in our house. But there was, it was, that's it. Again, a little bit of soap. Oh, you. That was it. Well, this, I'm trying with age. We're going to school. There was early elementary school. I can't kindergarten. I don't know what years it was. Those ages when the kids pick up these things. They pick up the bad language that they hear in the street and in the schoolyard. And they maybe start biting. I'm not sure what year they start biting. Where they pick something up to bite somebody? I don't know. But it happened. And we didn't hit. And it was somewhat of an embarrassment. You know, taking people. Abba picks you up, takes you to the bathroom, puts a little soap in your mouth. But it was a demonstration we felt was unacceptable behavior. Yes, sir.
The hardest thing, I think, sometimes is not if a child does something wrong, but if they don't do
happened to me many, many times. Right. Many, many times.
Because when they don't need to do the action and you have to respond, it's easier. If they do something unacceptable and you have to have a consequence, the hardest part, I think, is getting them to do something that you want them to do without being harsh.
Well, one of the ways out of that problem is not to demand too much. In my house, we demanded very little. But we didn't. There were certain unacceptable behaviors, yes, which we... I gave you an example of this Mida Kenegad Mida punishment that we had. And others. But we didn't demand too much. We never said, why don't you get 100 on the exam? Never said such a thing. Never. They came up with a paper. The paper. That's finished. Whatever it was. It didn't take any pressure on them to be these... I felt it was unhealthy. My parents never did it for me. And I didn't do it for whoever it comes home. Sure. You know, with a nice report, we gave him a big hug and a kiss, and then we got a piece of chocolate, whatever we did. But we never, never came, why didn't you do this? What else? So it came to household chores. So we used to make some kind of a rotation. You know, my wife had a chart. This one will wash the dishes, this one will sweep the floor, this one... And it were household jokes who would try to get out of their responsibilities, you know. But basically it worked. You know, we try to do it in an organized fashion without causing too much pressure on them, do this, do this. We tried very hard. The fewer demands that you make, the less confrontation you're going to have. Because children are inevitably not going to do whatever you demand. So the less you demand, the less confrontation there is.
That's what I mean, like household chores, right? Like, make sure you get up from the table, you take your plate, you clear the table.
We tried very hard. And, you know, whether we succeeded or failed at the time, I can't answer. We did our best, but there were no consequences. You never got a patch for not cleaning off the table or for not sweeping the floor or whatever other things that you had to do. We never gave pressure. You know, we try to encourage them. Did they all brush their teeth every single night? I wouldn't bet on that. I wouldn't bet on that at all. We tried. No, the most important thing in parenting is example. As an example, I mentioned in my drasha this morning, Cain Asu, that Moshe and Aaron also were involved in the Korban Pesach, and the Tziv explained they also dirtied their hands with the Dama Korban. So that no one should say, well, you know, practice what I preach. No, the parents have to all clean up from the table. That includes the father. If the father sit there like this, like the king of the palace, and they don't lift a finger, and they want their son to clean up from the table. That's not right. Is that right? If you want your son to do it, you have to do it yourself, etc. You brush your teeth yourself, and you whatever else you have to be done, you do it yourself, and children will follow by example. That's the best way. The best way.
And they come home all with D's on the report. You didn't have that problem. But you came home all with A's. That's why your father never reproved you. They come home with D's. Okay? No effort shown in school. Sloppy homework.
Okay. I had more than one child who came home with a grade which is not an A. We tried to provide encouragement. We tried to do homework with them. Spend time doing homework with my children, which is important. You know, he'll say, how can I do homework? I'm busy with my commitments. I have a cousin of mine who we used to go to weddings of, you know, some mutual cousin in Brooklyn, and he lives in Brooklyn, I live in Riverdale, and I'd walk in, he'd walk in an hour after me. I said, what took you so long? I went to him. I had to learn with my son. More important, so I missed my cousin's making a wedding, I'll come late. I'd learn with my son. Wow. So that was, took it as a Musar idea. Wow. He's learning with his son. He's missing this chuppah. I felt I'm compelled to go because of family commitments. And he's missing the chuppah because he has to learn with his son. Wow. Now, speaking of examples, we often want our sons to become Tamid HaChavim, should open up a sefer, etc., etc. The only way to get that done that I know of is the father should set the example. If the children see the father's learning, more likely that the children are going to be learning too. And for this reason, I always felt it was very, very important when my children were growing up to learn in the house. Not only in the shul, not only in the yeshiva, in the house. The children had to learn, and I think they did in my own house, that the default position was sitting with a sefer. That was the default position. Doesn't mean it was done all the time. Plenty of other things going on, the phones are ringing, and this is how people are coming in. But the default position, when there was some free time in the schedule, you open your Gemara, you open your Chumash, you open your Shulchan Aruch, that was the default position. And they grew up with that. They saw it. So they'll get a poor grade growing up. Sometimes the poor grade is because they don't have the abilities to get a high grade. We expect every child to really get an A. Not true. And you know, when a child is unable to get an A, sometimes the child is discouraged. They'll say, okay, but at least you can get a B. Yeah, but a B is not so exciting. So if he can't get an A, he's not even going to put in the effort to get a B, he'll get a C. It's not really his fault. Because if all the encouragement is given to the A students and your child is a B student, he'll likely end up a C student because there's no encouragement for the B students. So that's a school problem. The school should somehow find a way to give encouragement to all students. All students. As long as if they make an effort to get a B, should give them a tremendous yashakayach, a tremendous pat on the back. Not only to the A or A-plus students. And I don't run any schools. In my own shir, the children are much, much older, of course. But I have B students. And many of the B students, really, they deserve a C. But if they come regularly, so I discussed it with the Manal and Yeshiva. So this boy comes, he's there 9 o'clock every single day. He's a weak student. Give him the B, even though his grade is lower. Because he have to reflect his effort. He's there every single day. The guy doesn't come every day. And he's there, he gets the C. That's how I, generally speaking, that's our approach. Wake him up. It's not acceptable, not because you don't have a Gevaldige Gemara cup. It's not acceptable because you're not coming every day. That's what's not acceptable. So we have to understand this is true in the home as well as in the school. Not every child has the ability to get an A. And whatever the child does and works hard, we should compliment him. And if he's not working hard, we should sometimes realize he's being discouraged. He's getting negative messages either from us or from the school, which cause him to not to put in his best effort. Sometimes it's above him. The school has 25 kids in a single class. That's how Breuer's was. There's only one class. And if your son's at the top of the class, that's one thing. If he's not, it's another thing. And his teachers are not always making it easy for those who are not at the top of the class. And then there's no alternative. You know, in yeshiva, in my shiur, I give a pretty hard shiur. You don't like it, go to the panel of the rebbe and give an easy shiur. But if it's only one shiur, so it takes a very good rebbe to be able to appeal to the entire spectrum of all the talmidim. And not every rebbe is a terrific rebbe. I mean, they're all well-meaning people, but they're not always able to have this whole spectrum. Not easy. So to be very careful not to make demands upon children. Let them grow up at their own pace. And as we saw last week, patience. Patience. Chinuch is a long-term project. Tvach aroch. Very long-term. Don't demand your children to get hundreds all the time. It's a terrible mistake. Let them get what they get. You want to give them encouragement? We had, Baruch Hashem, in certain cases, individuals who would learn about children privately. Not that we gave them pressure, you know, like they were giving private tutors. No. Just that those, some of the children, when they had a little extra time on their hands. So on a
Yeah, we had people learning the Mechum Chumash and Rashi. Sometimes we had some. Maybe a little bit, but primarily, okay.
Right.
That one of the people learned with my son, Vasilis Hasharim. And I want to know, he's still connected. When my son comes to Meretz Yisrael, one of his stops he always tries to make is to that individual who took a liking to him. He saw he had a very wonderful, wonderful heart, and he had a certain specific need, and he took to him, and it was tremendous. People in the community, the other people also, other people who learned that, people learned with my son, Simcha, Yehuda, Akiva, Andrew, Fala, Moshe, every one of them, people from the community, on a very not pressured basis. Some on Friday night, some during the week, and come to shul. It was a beautiful experience. Frankly, I hardly learned with my children when they were younger, because I felt it would cause too much pressure for them. I see father, son learning, I've seen too much of it. And now, Baruch Hashem, upstairs is beautiful. Abu Subbanim, it's terrific. You know why it's so terrific? Because they're all in the room together. No one can yell at his son. You can't. In front of 50 other, 20 other men, it's such a pleasant environment. You should go up next week, before you come to my shiur, do me a favor, everybody. Before next week, 7:30, before you come to my shiur, 3-4 minutes, go peek in upstairs. Just peek in. You see, it's heartwarming. I walked in there just to get my svara, my papers, and I said, it's beautiful to see. And I'm telling you, part of the beauty is that they're 25 fathers and sons, knowing everything. Everybody's involved in father's best behavior. And the son doesn't get it. He says, hey, what's wrong with you? He's screaming, punching. You can't do that. You're being seen by other people. So that kind of experience, they didn't have Abba Subbanim when my children were growing up. One of the many things we didn't have around here. But Baruch Hashem, the world in some ways is getting better. Okay. Now, I cannot emphasize enough the importance of maintaining a pleasant, positive atmosphere in the home. This starts with the relationship between the parents themselves. Oh, here's where it starts. If there's no shalom bias, if the husband and wife are fighting and the children see it, it's a total disaster. A disaster. Because if the parents are fighting, how can the children grow up pleasantly? And continues with much thought about creating a peaceful home routine infused with simcha. Okay. Now, we asked before about responsibilities. Cleaning up the table, sweeping the floor. So Bivalbi addresses it directly. Right? Well, the wisdom of chinuch included a boy or a girl in caring for a newborn. Right? Making him your helper. Right? You uplift the child tremendously. There's no room for jealousy. Since the older child identifies with his mother, and he quotes it from Parshas Vayetze. Yaakov said to his brothers, collect stones. He had no brothers. It means his sons. Rashi explains, last three lines on page 39. From the time they were capable of helping him, they were called his brothers. Since they stood by him during the time of need, they became like his partners. A father and a mother should treat their sons and daughters as partners. This means, and I'm a little bit about mothers, I don't know too much about it, but my view, it's my wife's view, is to invite the daughters into the kitchen. And she even invited her sons into the kitchen. Many of my sons are capable of making cholent, of baking chocolate cake, and they got much more than their father. I never learned anything of this stuff, but my children, they know how to do it. And they relish it. Some people are smiling, they're the beneficiaries of my children's cooking and baking. And all my wife's encouragement. And my daughters, Blia and Hara, each one is woohoo. And my wife said she wasn't brought up that way. When her mother ran the kitchen, you know, the way it was older, the mother ran the kitchen. She got no hand in the kitchen. But when we got married, she just sort of someone figured it out on her own. Whereas Baruch Hashem and my daughters are married, they already have years of experience in making Shabbos, and it's very important. They become partners. Is the wisdom of Yaakov to transform my son into my brother, to convey to the child that in some ways, only some ways, he is my equal. He helps me and becomes my partner. It's not burden, it's enthusiasm. The job honors him. Okay? It's a very important point. Give him responsibility, but again, in some ways, you have to be very careful that there has to be a hierarchy, not what goes on in certain places that the son considers himself an equal of his parent. That's a disaster. That's terrible. That destroys the entire concept of parenting. There has to be a hierarchy. Yes, he's the father, you're the son. You have to realize that. But the son can be considered like a brother in some ways if he assists his his father. He says his father is very, very important. Very important. Now, the last part of today's shiur, just for a few minutes, is what Rav Volbe calls false goals. False goals. It says, parents are driven sometimes by completely corrupt traits. Traits that the parents would never consider displaying in its relationships with other adults. But they may exhibit these very traits in their relationship with our children. What are they? Jealousy, hatred, pursuit of honor, anger, conceit, and especially a desire for control. They want to say, this child under my authority, have the right to exercise unconditional power over him. Let me tell you a story, which I never saw in my life, but people told me this story. It was a gentleman who considered his responsibility to have complete control of his house. And he would sit at the head of the table, and if he would make some certain kind of a movement with his mouth with a certain sound, everyone would snap to attention. Something like this. Something like that. When he would go that, and the children were brought up this way, and it was a reign of terror. The father would just stop what you were doing, stop eating, stop talking, stop this, just be in full attention to the father. And a reign of terror. The kid used to make fun of it. When he wasn't there, they imitate him and they mimic him. So he had control by terror. But you know, as soon as they got out of under his thumb, he wasn't looking, they were mimicking him. It was a disaster. This idea of controlling children is terrible. You should educate children, you should help children, you should encourage children. But you don't control children? It's a very, very, be very careful. Look over here, jealousy. The neighbor's child provides his parents with more assistance than my children provide me. Why doesn't he help me more? That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You might have been by jealousy. Honor. Right? Guests visit. My child greet them nicely, behave pleasantly. Not for his child's growth. So that I can elicit compliments from the guests on my superb child-raising expertise. Then I feel good. It's not for your son, it's for you. A disaster. Anger. We spoke about anger in Beinish Lishto. The same problem applies with respect to anger over here. If out of anger I strike my child, or was educationally necessary. Baloney. You're not allowed to hit a child out of anger. And if I ever did it, I clap al chet for a terrible mistake. If you hit your child not out of anger, even then, I'm sure Rabbi Eliezer Lapchanz was not angry. He just felt it was good at the time. Even that he regretted. But to hit out of anger, that's terrible. That's simply terrible. You're just an angry person, and you're not in control of yourself. You're not in control of yourself. It's terrible. You have to be in control. Not control of others, control of yourself. That's the mantra over here. Education is not controlling others. Education is controlling yourself. If you control yourself, you will make better parenting decisions. Better parenting decisions. Chanoch lenar al pi darko. Darko of whom? Not the parent. The child. Child. Right? This is page 43. What happened to the principle that we should educate a child according to his way? Some parents egocentrically assume that his way means their way. No. That's terrible. Terrible. It's a terrible thing. To be so, so careful of and how we do things. And don't expect more from your children. And don't give them more than they need either. Give examples of some Holocaust survivors. He calls them people who grew up in impoverished circumstances. So their children should lack nothing. They ruin them. They spoil them. It's overindulgence. It's terrible. Egoism, selfishness. Vayishman yeshuan vayivot. Or you decide that your child will achieve what I did not. That was, I wanted to be a Talmud Chacham. I couldn't go to yeshiva. My son becomes a Gadol Hador. It's ridiculous. That's again your own projection. You want your child to do what you want. You have to raise your child to do what he wants or she wants, and his way or her way. These are the proper ways to raising children. So I want to discuss next Motzei Shabbos, Mit Hashem, a little bit, is the concept that we know today as the at-risk children or the quote off the derech children. What causes it? How can we prevent it? How do we treat it? Obviously, everything I'm going to say is going to be only tentative hypotheses. I don't have any monopolies to wisdom, but I feel it's an important topic we have to discuss. It's a painful one, but I believe that it would not be complete a discussion of parenting without making some kind of reference to this phenomenon. Even as we all daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day, that we should not be tested with the Tarbus Ra B'Toch Beisa, which is worse than Gog U'Magog, as we saw in the Medrash. But nonetheless, it does exist out there, and how do you deal with it? Not that there's one easy solution, but we'll discuss it a little bit, and I'm certainly, especially next week, I'll be anxious to hear the input of the people in the room, to hear what they have to say. If you have something to tell me before next week, call me up. I've got good sources for me to include it in my presentation. I will be bringing in a sefer called, the book called Off the Derech, which my Rabbi Shatter calls a Musa Sefer, and other source that you have to bring to my attention, I'd be very appreciative. Shavua Tov.